Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:26 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is October 13th. Well, CPI came out today at 5.4%, and that is still holding the peaks from a few months ago. So this has been a full quarter where CPI has held. But I think it's also important to just look at the nominal price, because we can see year over year, so there's going to be some loopy comparisons overall. But I think when we look at the nominal index, there's a clear uptrend. And yes, we certainly had a dip in CPI in the first and second quarters of 2020, and then since then, the overall rate has accelerated. So I think that's important. We can look at this on a monthly logarithmic scale chart, and we still see the acceleration. And there isn't a lot of evidence to suggest that this acceleration is over. So when we hear some of the Fed governors talking about inflation being transitory as a dirty word, well, it seems that they are stepping back from it. So that's increasing the potential that they're going to start tapering in the not too distant future. And that helped to support bond prices today, because it implies that there will be less supply. And if there's less supply, well, perhaps then down here in the region of the lows from back in April may not be such a bad time to start buying the dip. So we're getting a little bit of support coming through. But when they start tapering, they're going to be modest about it, and it might take 8 or 9 months to in fact get that tapering process done. And in the meantime, inflationary pressures are going to continue, and this supply chain inelasticity that's been a significant factor as a result of the pandemic and the government's responses to it, on top of all the regulatory burdens that have been imposed over the last decade, that's not going to be unwound in the short term. So gold was up over $30 in here today. I really think we're at an interesting juncture here, because over the course of the last 14 months, we've had some big downward dynamics, and every one of those downward dynamics has followed a rally. So the size of the downward dynamics has been extremely jarring for long investors, and it's been emboldening for the people who want to short. And the one thing you want when you short something is for a big decline to follow initiating the position, and then you get to put in a stop and you're hoping that the price will pull back in a violent manner. And anyone who's been shorting the rallies in gold since August of last year has been making money. And we've had these big declines. And we've had another big decline in August. And then we've had a rebound. Now, if you're buying the dip, what you want is hopefully that the price just keeps going. So we had a good-sized rally in March and May. And we had another good-sized rally in August. And we have a sequence of higher reaction lows, but we still have the sequence of lower rally highs too. So we're getting a triangular pattern starting to evolve here, and particularly so since March of this year. And generally speaking, a triangular pattern, it's indicative of people still willing to sell the rallies and buy the dips, but ultimately it's a narrowing of this imbalance between, or the generally, when you start a range, it means that there's still a lot of argument going on about whether it's a bull or bear market. Now, as the range starts to contract, well, then the arguments, they start to become progressively more bold, but the price action dictates that we are coming towards the end of this decision-making process. So ultimately, we're going to see a breakout. And when that breakout occurs, it's going to be violent. And it's going to take people by surprise. So we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic. And the most recent two dynamic moves have been on the upside. and we're hovering here around the $1,800 level. If gold can sustain a move above $1,830, in other words, if it can take out these peaks from back in July and August, well, then that is going to pierce the potentially at least pierce a vacuum of supply above the market, because that level is where we've seen prices pull back for the last 4 months. It's where anyone who wanted a short the market has been initiating positions successfully, and therefore it's where we'll start to see resistance starting to come back in. And if resistance fails there, well, then it's going to unleash waves of new buying, because there'll be the people who are going to cover their shorts. There are going to be the people that failed to buy the dip and are going to rush back in. Then it's also going to start to change the algorithmic trading systems as well. So we're at an extremely interesting position here for gold. What I think is also encouraging right now is that we're starting to see some confirmatory evidence of support coming through from the other precious metals. So silver had broken below $22 at the beginning of, the end of September, and now it has failed to sustain that downward break. Now, if it can hold the $22 area, well, then we can start talking about a failed downside break, and that would open up the potential that it could go all the way back up to test the $30 area and potentially break out. Platinum is back above $1,000. So that's a meaningful move, and it's also suggestive that we're starting to see demand coming through in the region of the upper side of the base formation. And $1,000 is a big psychological level, and so far this rally, to date at least, has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So this is looking progressively more encouraging for platinum overall. And then palladium is much less of a precious metal, but it has at least broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it is beginning to steady from a deeply oversold condition. Now, palladium has done spectacularly well over the course of the last 5 years, and I think it's going to be a really hard sell to suggest that it's going to be the precious metal that outperforms. But it's not likely to fall back below the $1,500 area either. Now, when we think about industrial resources, copper prices were up in a dynamic manner in here today, but perhaps more important than that, they have now broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So, provided this gain is sustained, and it can sustain a move up and through the 450 area, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. We are starting to see that some of the other industrial resources have broken on the upside already. So then zinc is pushing up and out of what's been approximately a six-month range and reasserting on the upside. Tin prices have been resurgent over the course of the last year and are right in the region of their peaks, and that is already well ahead of the peak values that we saw back in 2011. So we have plenty of evidence that there is increasing demand for industrial resources, and the LME Metals Index was at a new high in here today. So as we look at what's happening out there, then there's certainly inflationary pressures, and this is starting to create demand for inflation hedges. And of course, then you have the fact that bond yields were a little softer in here today, and I think it's particularly noteworthy to look at the performance of the five-year yield, because it was looking like a downside key reversal at one point in here today, and then it rebounded. So we have an overbought condition, or at least and on the price it would be an oversold condition, so we could easily get some consolidation. And There's the argument, of course, that if tapering is going to go ahead, there'll be less supply of bonds, and there'll be less supply of liquidity, and therefore there's the potential, at least, that we won't have quite as much supply dominance. But of course, that's predicated on the view that the US government will stop issuing bonds. And that's obviously a very open question. So I still don't think that bonds are going to be an attractive place to be. What we did see was that anything that is interest rate sensitive rebounded in here today. So the solar sector is bouncing from the lower side of its range. Now, a number of those companies are very interest rate sensitive, and a significant number of them don't make any profits at all. But then we have companies like SolarEdge, and I thought I had the right ticker there. Yes, I was correct. SolarEdge is the largest constituent on that ETF, and it has rebounded emphatically now from the region of the trend mean this week. But it's also, I think, perhaps more important to highlight that it's a renewable energy equipment manufacturer. It's not a solar panel manufacturer, but rather they produce the inverters. And inverters have been a much better way of investing in solar than the actual solar panels have. Also, the price of silicon for solar panels is ramping higher because of the power shortages in China. So that is going to eat into the profitability of the panel manufacturers, but the inverter producers are comparatively less affected by that. Then we also had rebound today in shares that have been pulling back, like ASML and some of the other semiconductor companies. So it has steadied in the region of the trend mean. But my biggest fear here is that this strength and at least steadiness that we're seeing in government bond prices isn't going to last, and that the enthusiasm to try and buy the dip in these companies that have already done spectacularly is just not going to be enough to continue to sustain the price action. Whereas when we look at some of these gold miners, they've pulled back in an extraordinarily aggressive manner, and the ETF is now starting to bounce from the region of the upper side of the base formation. The move below 30 has not been sustained. We're getting an emphatic rebound. It's in the process, although it hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it's looking progressively more encouraging. There have been some really quite acute pullbacks in Australian gold miners. Evolution Mining has come back from 650 to 350 over the course of the last 12 months, and is really just beginning to exhibit some evidence of support building. Regis Resources has come back even more, coming from down from 6 to 2, and they did cut their dividend, so that has been part of the reason why the share pulled back in a very aggressive manner. But the valuations are extremely attractive. It's trading at an estimated PE of 8.3, and the gross yield is about 4.47, and the net is about 3.3, if my memory serves me. But the reality is that they're not going to invest a lot of money in expansion without having the money on hand. And they've been quite clear in stating that in their earnings calls. And I think this is one of the most important points about the mining sector right now, because market pundits are looking at the energy price, and they're starting to think that, well, if oil prices go up a lot and oil continues to hold this move above $80, then that's a major component in the production price of materials. And that's as true of any of the industrial resources as it is of the gold miners. But the most important thing for gold miners and for miners in general is how much they're willing to spend on developing new resources. And one of the reasons why the mining sector, particularly the gold mining sector, did so terribly on a comparative basis relative to the gold price from an initial start where it outperformed gold, the gold bugs index really then didn't do much of anything between about 2006 and 8. And that was because those gold miners spent every penny they had and borrowed more to build new mines, to go out and get as much acreage as they could and start drilling holes. And it was a speculative mania among the miners because they were racing to replace reserves after a generational long bear market. And a lot of the resources that were brought to market were of a much lower grade than investors had been accustomed to in the 1970s. So the marginal cost of production has risen, and now it's on a conservative basis is sitting somewhere between about $800 and $900 for the best resources, and then more than that for others. But on this occasion, following the massive decline off the peak in 2011 down to the lows in 2015, miners are a lot more conservative, and they're not willing, in aggregate at least, to commit to new mining ventures until they have cash on hand. And that's the most important factor, because if they are willing to hold cash and they're willing to reward investors with dividends, and they are seeing their cash flow increase because gold is in a bull market, then gold miners start to provide leverage to the gold price. And then when they do eventually find new gold, well, then it adds to that attraction. So then we can see that companies that are just on the cusp of starting production, they tend to be richly rewarded by investors. Capricorn Metals is certainly one of those. Perseus Mining is another company where we've seen, I'm rather surprised that Google's predictive texting didn't pick that up faster. Well, that would also suggest that there aren't that many people typing it in. But the share does look like it is firming from the region of the trend mean and the upper side of this range that's been forming for more than a year already. So it's looking increasingly likely that gold miners are going to start doing better. And then one thing that I think was particularly interesting in here today as well is that emerging markets really did pick up steam. So the dollar index was down in a reasonably dynamic manner. Now, it's not a sufficiently large dynamic to really question the upward bias. It's got a lot of work to do to vindicate my contention that the dollar is not about to reassert on the upside in a meaningful manner. I think the balance of probabilities is that the dollar is going to trend downwards. But the problem, of course, is that if you're going to have a very weak dollar, well, some other currency has to get stronger. And the dollar index is mostly euro and yen. So who among those is going to tolerate having a significantly stronger currency? That's the big outstanding question for anyone who wants to be overly bearish of the dollar. But what we did see today was that the renminbi was stronger. And China doesn't seem to have much tolerance for significantly increasing the supply of the currency. So if that's the case, they are willing to push this issue with China Evergrande and the property market until it causes a problem where they're going to be forced to intervene. And the number of property companies that come under pressure is likely to increase. But then we can think about what's been happening in some of the other markets, because when the renminbi strengthens, then it takes some of the pressure off of the regional markets. So the Indonesian market briefly pushed on to new recovery highs, I should say, in here today. Now, it's a little overbought in the short term, but it's on the cusp of completing a four-year range. So this is certainly looking like more encouraging action overall. The Malaysian market, which has been underperforming for years, has also rebounded in an emphatic fashion over the last 3 months. So this is also looking more encouraging. The Straits Times Index in Singapore was also in positive territory and bouncing from the region of the trend mean. The Nifty Index in India pushed on to an additional new high. The Nifty Index pushed on to another new high, and that's been certainly, I think, aided by the rebound that we've had in Tata Motors, where it was up in an extremely impressive manner in here today on the back of investment in its battery division. So that's really an incredible rebound off the lows in 2020, coming from below 100 to over 500 in the space of little more than a year and a half is really a spectacular recovery for the share. And it suggests again that India has the potential to be a manufacturing powerhouse. And the announcement in here today from Narendra Modi that there are going to be clear efforts underway to dismantle policy silos within the government and to streamline infrastructure development. That's something that investors have been crying out about with regard to India for as long as I've been working. So when we start to think about progress being made on that front, then it's really a very significant bullish phenomenon. And it's suggestive, at least, that India is going to be the growth center for Asia for, I think, at least the next decade. And I think that's why the stock market continues to be so firm. Now, then we have the banking sector, and India is back in a new credit cycle, so that's positive for the market overall. And then I think it's interesting that the one regional market that is not performing right now is Pakistan, and it broke downwards in here today, and the Pakistani rupee is also breaking on the downside. Generally, Pakistan has outperformed India, but that is no longer the case. And I do wonder whether the ramifications of the end of the Afghanistan war is weighing on that market, because Pakistan benefited enormously from money being poured into the economy, and it's been underperforming since. So I think that's perhaps an exogenous factor that's contributing to the underperformance. But we've definitely seen that the return of interest in emerging markets in Asia, the continued performance of industrial resources, the relative strength of Asian currencies, and the rebound in precious metals, that's generally a that combination of factors is generally supportive of global growth, infrastructure development, but also a increasing worry about financial repression, about the loss of purchasing power of fiat currencies. So these are certainly factors that are starting to contribute to the conclusion that inflation is not transitory and that we have an environment where investors need to start thinking about hedging their exposure. And of course, one of the ways that people are hedging that exposure is with Bitcoin, and it rebounded reasonably impressively in here today. So this range that's been forming for the last week is holding the move above the peak from September, and it's still a benign looking environment overall. There's going to be the software rollout of Taproot on November 12th, and prices are rallying and have been rallying impressively since that was announced in July. So there's the potential that it may be a buy the rumor to sell the news environment, but the last time we had a big software rollout, it was bullish overall. So there are two arguments certainly to that particular piece of news, and at least a break in the sequence of higher reaction lows and a very clear downward dynamic would be required to question potential for additional upside. But there is no question that right now Bitcoin is parasitic on the wider cryptocurrency sector. So Ethereum was in positive territory today, but not in a dynamic manner. There is still the threat of regulation, and size matters when it comes to regulation, and not least in terms of the size of the programming community necessary to deal with it. And that is going to be a particular burden for smaller projects. So Bitcoin is also rallying because of that particular threat. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.